Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster. And I'll tell you, the views of Bill Buckmaster, it's hot outside. That's for sure. It's 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Bill Buckmaster, along with my engineer producer, John Couch, on the other side of the glass. Bob Dio, our longtime engineer producer, enjoying a week off in upstate New York at a family reunion. Yes, it's that time of year, isn't it? In June, it seems like it's graduation and reunion times. And in Tucson, we held off on the 100-degree heat for a while. Actually, I think one of the 10 latest starts of hitting 100 degrees. So that certainly was nice, a little nice change. So we've got a really hot day today. Then things will be around normal for the next week or so, and that's usually about 100, 101 degrees. You're listening to 1030, Tucson's Voice, for trusted local news and talk on this Thursday, June 13th, 2019. Our live line number, if you'd like to join in the conversation and speak with Pima County Supervisors Chairman Richard Elias, who's joining us on the live line. The live line number is 790, and he is on the live line from Washington, D.C. Chairman Elias, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. How are you today?
Doing very well, and it's very interesting. You were given an invitation to testify yesterday before the United States Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works on this proposed change that would eliminate federal protections for many rivers across the country, including our own Santa Cruz. Tell me about what's involved here and how did all of this come about, Richard Elias?
Well, the Trump administration has proposed to eliminate the Clean Water Rule of 2015. And the changes that they're proposing would eliminate protections for ephemeral rivers, rivers that run when there's big storms. So that's exactly like the Santa Cruz River. They've also proposed eliminating protection to irrigation ditches and tributaries of rivers like this. And so it's a big risk in terms of water pollution, discharges, the same kind of things that happened right in our lovely Tucson during the years of TCE contamination.
Well, Richard, during the monsoon season, we get a lot of nasty stuff that's flowing that, you know, we haven't had rain in a while. A lot of nasty stuff is going to be flowing. And so no longer, if this takes effect, that we would these protections would be eliminated. Tell me, what is the sense in that? Why do that?
Well, I think the mood is that they want to make regulatory control of the waters of the United States less stringent because it helps business, it helps farmers, it helps people who basically have an interest in discharging pollutants into our waterways. And it's probably good for those businesses, but not very good for the people who live in those communities.
What was your test? Give us a sense of your testimony, please.
Well, I tried to explain the importance of ephemeral rivers in the arid Southwest and how we really seem to be dry riverbeds with nothing happening. But the truth is that we have giant aquifers underneath those rivers where water flows. So anything that's discharged into arroyos or tributaries then gets washed into the river and eventually down into our drinking water supply. I tried to make that very clear to them. I tried to talk about our history and the thousands of people who lost their lives due to trichloroethylene and the contamination that went along with that. And I think all the members were receptive to that. But they believe that the states are going to be able to provide the kind of protection that the federal government provides right now. I tried to answer those questions by saying Arizona has a very poor legacy of all of that, and that's exactly what happened in our own community. No one was there to protect us, and so there's a high level of fear, and we need the federal government to come in and do their job like they've been doing since 1972 when the Clean Water Act was passed.
So what happens now? Is this going to go before this before the full Senate or what?
Likely it will go before the full Senate because I believe it was going to be approved by that committee, and it's in several other committees also. But then likely there'll be a vote in the Senate on it and then on to the House. So it's a very scary measure. We really need to have people voice their concerns and place any comments they can into the public record about this and let them know that we need the federal government to protect us here in southern Arizona and throughout the United States.
We're speaking with Pima County Supervisors Chairman Richard Elias, who testified yesterday before a Senate committee on environment and public works. And it's not just like this TCE thing went away. The Arizona Daily Star on Sunday had a major report. We have water contamination problems happening right now out at the Air National Guard facility, correct?
And Davis Monthan as well. And, Bill, that's the perfect example of discharges to happen by mistake, without forethought and malice, but still cause us tremendous problems. If we have regulations in place to protect us, then those folks who make those mistakes need to go back and clean it up before it works its way down into our aquifer.
How serious is this thing at the National Guard? Are you very concerned about that?
Absolutely, absolutely. And just to put the complexity of it all in perspective, the same materials, a fire retardant that many airports and Air Force facilities and military facilities use, contain some dangerous chemicals. They have stopped using them. But the chemicals that were released at Davis Monthan showed up in wells in Marana, 35 miles away. So that gives you a sense of how complicated our water system is once that water goes underground and enters into the aquifer.
It just doesn't seem like the right time to be pulling those protections. I don't know. It just seems crazy to me. But we'll see where that goes. And so this will have to go before the Senate if they're going to try to pull those regulations. And it would have to go before the House as well, or what?
Likely it'll go before the House as well before it's passed into law.
How does our Congressman Raul Grijalva feel about this?
Well, actually, he's very much in support of the Clean Water Rule of 2015. That was an agreement that had been brokered over 10 years with bipartisan efforts all across the country. More than 500 hearings were held. More than a million comments were submitted. And it took us 10 years to come to agreement on how best to protect ephemeral and intermittent streams and rivers. And this is being proposed to be taken away within 60 days.
All right. Chairman Elias, please stick around for another segment. I want to ask you about some county business, and that will be continue on the Buckmaster Show. But first, I want to tell people about our great sponsor, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's located in the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Owner and chief baker Steve and his team have created now a wonderful breakfast menu. They're open at 6:30 each morning. They've installed the new grill. They've got all the equipment to do that hot breakfast. I've been up there several times. It's doing very well. If you don't want breakfast right now and they are still serving it, how about lunch at Mona's Danish Bakery? One of those sandwiches with that great bread, and there is a wide variety of breads to choose from. I kind of like the rustic bread. That's delicious. Also, that all the European-type breads are available at Mona's Danish Bakery. Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. There's also a link to Mona's Danish Bakery and a link to all of the great Buckmaster Show sponsors on our website, buckmastershow.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show Thursday edition on 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk coming up tomorrow during the noon hour. Our Friday Focus interview takes a deep dive into the city of Tucson's budget. We'll be having a conversation. Joe Ferguson from the Arizona Daily Star will join me in the questioning of Mike Ortega. Mr. Ortega is the city manager for the city of Tucson. Additional support comes from Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. You know, they're on 13 acres, and they've, of course, got all the great plants and everything you need for your garden. But right now, Zocalo Village, five shops specializing in this wonderful, handmade, in many cases, merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Zocalo for years was over at Country Club and Broadway in that area. Now they're part of the Green Things family. So you can get all that great merchandise for the home and all the items for the garden in one stop at Green Things, 3384 East River Road, and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Coming up in about 10 minutes, our Buckmaster Show contributor on history, Ken Scoville, will talk about what Tucson was like before air conditioning. Pima County Supervisors Chairman Richard Elias, of course, a native. His family's been here since Presidio days. Do you remember the old-timers, Supervisor Elias, talking about the days before air conditioning in the old Pueblo?
Absolutely. I remember when we didn't have air conditioning.
Really?
We had one of those swamp coolers and worked pretty good in the dry part of the season, but in the humid part of the monsoons, it was pretty miserable.
And isn't it true everybody tried to converge over to the movie theater, to the Fox, where it was cool inside?
Well, you know, that would get you a couple hours of relief, and and that was pretty good. That was pretty good. I personally used to sleep on the floor in the living room right next to a big fan, and but that's only because I was the baby of the family that they let me do that. Everyone else had to sleep in the room, or some, my brothers and sisters at times, slept outside.
Supervisor Chairman Richard Elias of the Pima County Board of Supervisors with us on the live line. Otherwise, he would be with me as usual in studio here at KVOI, but he was testifying yesterday before a U.S. Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works about these proposed changes that would eliminate the federal protections on like the Santa Cruz and some of the other waterways around the country. Let's bring this home to the Board of Supervisors voting. Tentative budget has been approved. Now, what's the next step, Richard Elias?
Well, at our next meeting, we're scheduled to pass a final budget for next year. And Supervisor Miller has made a number of suggestions about reducing the budget and changes to the budget that's been proposed by Mr. Huckleberry. So we're going to have to see how that discussion goes, and I'm reserving judgment about whether I'll vote on the budget, depending on how that discussion goes and what my colleagues decide to include as a part of final budget.
What is she proposing, in effect?
Well, some cutbacks to employees, eliminating the raises that we have offered, as well as some changes to the pay-as-you-go philosophy that Mr. Huckleberry is starting to put together. So that we're able to continue our capital improvement projects.
Let's go to the live line. David is calling us 790-2040. David, what's on your mind?
My name is David Lutz, and I want to thank you, Richard Elias, for pulling the Washington stick up for the Clean Water Act. There's another aspect of it. If it's it'll make it easier for developers to put in more cookie-cutter sprawl. And believe me, this has driven my taxes up. When they delisted the pig mail 12 years ago, my taxes exploded. It went from $1,500 to over $5,000 to pay the bill for a tidal wave of sprawl that happened when they delisted the pig mill.
Right.
So
okay.
Defending the Clean Water Act, it makes it harder for more cookie-cutter kind of sprawl, which, believe me, that drives my taxes up.
Okay, thank you, David. Any comment there, Richard?
Absolutely. The changes to the Clean Water Act would likely make Section 404 permits, which are offered by the Army Corps of Engineers, would probably be easier to get since there would be no regulatory issues for them to comply with changes that they would make to tributaries and arroyos that surround our valley. So he's absolutely right. Likely we'll see an increase in taxes as development continues with less regulation.
The recently released road repair list from the Pima County Department of Transportation, Richard Elias, shows a group of arterial and local roadways in need of some work for the upcoming fiscal year. And the Arizona Daily Star had a listing on Monday of the district by district who gets what. Allie Miller's district will get more than 31 miles of roadway in the 245 square miles of District 1. How about your own district, District number, District 5? Would you get anything out of this?
Well, we'd get a little bit less than District 1, but the vast majority of our roads are in the city of Tucson. But Pima County is committed to continuing to improve those roadways as well. But we'd end up with about 5 or 6 miles less than District 1 in terms of repairs to arteries and neighborhood roads. So not unusual for District 5, but the bigger concern is that we're starting to take money out of the general fund now to fund roadway repair, which is probably necessary since we haven't found another way to fund those projects. But it's important that we have tax equity for those folks who live in the city of Tucson or the other jurisdictions throughout Pima County.
Are you disappointed with the early childhood education going nowhere as far as Pima County is concerned?
I'm very disappointed, and I think it's something that we all need to keep working on. I think the county is interested, although I don't have any other supervisors that are supporting the notion. The idea being is that they want some partners involved in the deal. And ultimately, they're scared of the folks who have convinced everybody that investment in our communities through revenue enhancement is a bad idea. Personally, I think if we're going to be successful in our economic development efforts, we need to spend money on our kids now. This is not a short-term fix. This is a long-term fix. But it is the right thing to do. And frankly, I think we're going to get there. The communities that have created programs like this for a quality preschool, their children are succeeding in school and starting their lives on a good trajectory. I think Pima County needs to join that list desperately.
Isn't it kind of pay me now or pay me later when it comes to our young people?
That's always the way it is. Public education has changed America and made us into the greatest nation on earth. But at this point, our school districts are facing difficult times, and I think we need to double down on that investment that affects every family in America and not just those who have enough money to afford private education.
So you're not getting back to the budget, and that vote is scheduled now for June 18th. You could very well be a no vote on this budget. Is that correct?
That's correct, Bill. I'm going to see how the conversation goes. I'm going to see if we have a commitment to at least continuing to talk about quality preschool. And I'm going to make sure that our employees are taken care of and that we are creating a system for road repair that includes tax equity for all the jurisdictions in Pima County.
All right, Richard Elias, we're going to let you go. I know you've got a lot of business still back in D.C. and then a trip back to Tucson. Thank you for spending a few minutes with us. We very much appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill. It's always a pleasure to be on the Buckmaster Show.
Thank you very much. Richard Elias, the chairman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. I want to take this opportunity to tell our listeners about one of our great sponsors, and it's only a three-hour drive to a beautiful area of the southwestern United States, and specifically the southwest portion of the Land of Enchantment over in New Mexico. I'm talking about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. So much going on over there. If you're into rodeos, this is the time to be there. Got a big rodeo that's currently underway. It's a pro rodeo stop in Silver City. I would suggest visiting southwestnewmexico.org. There you'll find the complete listing of the many great places to stay, all sorts of recreation opportunities, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, making a short trip north of Silver City to the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Here's the good news. The elevation is 5,500 to 7,000 feet. So, yes, it will be cooler over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. This is the Buckmaster Show. Since 2011, right here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on celebrity cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Are you a business who wants to make a difference in children's education without it costing a single penny? IBE, a school tuition organization, wants you to know about the Corporate Tax Credit Scholarship Program. Eligible businesses will receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit. Talk to your accountant today. For two decades, IBE has made it simple for corporate donors, working with over 290 schools. IBE awards 95% of all corporate donations to low-income and disabled students. Deadline, June 30th. azcorporatetax.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Ken Scoville, the Buckmaster Show historian. We're so honored to have Ken. He's one of two dozen contributors who do contribute to this program on a regular basis. His bio is up at buckmastershow.com along with all of the contributors. And Ken has a very important talk that's coming up on territorial Tucson before air conditioning. He'll be appearing at the Tohono O'Toole Park. That's such a nice location anyway. And he's going to be over there Saturday morning before it gets too hot, from 10 to 11 in the morning in the Education Center. Ken, how do people find out about where to go for this?
You just want to go on to the Tohono O'Toole Park website, and there should be a place to register online. And they also give you directions. If you're an old timer, the Education Center now is where the Haunted Bookshop used
to be. Sure, I remember that.
So that's where I'll be talking. I'm doing a talk on Tucson before the air conditioning for June and July. I'm talking about medicine in Tucson history, and then we'll talk about the birthday in August.
Oh, yeah, Tucson's birthday coming up. How are we going to survive here in this age of climate change in Tucson, Ken?
Well, I was listening to a previous caller. Supervisor
Richard Elias.
And historians really like to ask the question, bring things up to the current. Why is Tucson the city it is today?
Uh-huh.
And when I do this, and when I do tours and other talks, we have done a better job than Phoenix, but we deny we live in a desert. All you have to do is look around. Too many houses with west windows.
Right.
We cook in the parking lots going to the supermarket.
Oh,
not enough
man.
Trees
yeah,
planted.
It's terrible.
And what's interesting, if you go before air conditioning and the way to move the air, we had to do better.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have any choice.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do a talk on before air conditioning and before evaporative cooling, before fans, anything, it really goes back to just nature. You had to either endure, evade, or escape.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the strategies?
Well, if you just had to take it like we have to do it, you very quickly, and this goes back for hundreds of years, they had a clay pot called an olla.
Oh, yeah.
And what would it do? It would be porous because it was just clay. It was unfinished.
Yeah.
And so the water would sort of permeate out and it would evaporate and would cool the water. And ranch houses and ranching, they used to even store milk and butter in it.
Really?
And butter.
It would keep it that cool?
It would cool it because of that evaporation. They'd have it sort of a little canvas sling and try and get some breezes going, but it would keep it that cool. But everybody in Tucson had an olla.
Huh.
And that's how you got cool drinking water.
Did they have sprinkling wagons?
Sprinkling wagons, most people, I think the business community appreciated it because business slows down in the summer. You couldn't, when there were dirt streets, you couldn't get anybody out to shop. And late afternoon, you know, everybody closed up during the high heat of the day, but they'd have sprinkling carts running up and down, especially Congress Street. And this is before pavement, so
sure.
Before the turn of the 20th century. And then people would finally come out because it was a little cooler and they'd get it evaporated. And then, like everything else, the editorials in the paper should be wasting drinking water on. And then the business community said, well, we don't have business, we don't have anything.
Yeah.
So we've had this love-hate relationship with the desert, and because we've got mechanical means today, that we've changed. But just going back in earlier times, aside the sprinkling wagon, by 1875 or so, people brought into town a mechanical means to do ice.
Mm-hmm.
So the minute you had ice, then things just immediately, at least you had some escape, something cooling and cold, and that would later lead on to ice cream and all those other things.
So we had an ice house about 1875 then?
We had some, not big production thing, but we did have things in town. When the railroad came in, they also brought ice and cold storage things, but we did have ice houses.
So that's enduring. What about evading the heat?
Well, evading would be just like, you know, if you see any good desert dweller, they're going to go into the ground.
Uh-huh.
And you're going to see them getting down a few feet during the heat of the day. That's the reason for adobe homes. And there were mud roofs on top of this. So they did everything. Adobe homes would still get hot, but it slows down that transference of the heat. And you needed really about a 20 to 24-inch wall. So if you were looking for your dream adobe home and it was only 10 or 12, you might want to take a pass on it because you're really going to need that 20 inches or so to slow it. And then by the end of the day, it got hot in the house. You'd open up all the windows, doors, drag the cot outside, or leave it out, and then sleep at night. Next morning, the heat has passed through, and it slows it down so you can get through the summer.
How about over at the fort, at Fort Lowell?
Well,
they had to wear those heavy
wool uniforms
and stuff.
Later when they actually moved out to Fort Lowell, that they were had adobe residences and buildings and officers' quarters. But when they were based downtown, I think we talked about this in the past, where the Children's Museum, the Carnegie Library is, they were in tents. Now, the only way they survived then is they built a ramada with mud and branches and everything to get the sun off. So there's lots of things that we've done over the decades. And, you know, just going about it, so there's that evading, sleeping outside, and then escaping it. Believe it or not, a lot of people by middle of May, you start thinking about, are we going to go to the coast for the summer?
Right.
Did you have a way of getting out of town? Or you went up to Mount Lemmon. You wanted, just like the native people, you're going to escape if you possibly. But if you're getting back to Apache Indian conflict times, you had to get a little bit, I don't know if I want to try and get the stage out of town. I don't know how that's going to work. So you just sort of had to make the commitment that we're staying here.
In Apache times, I think the trip to San Diego might have been a little difficult.
We had two school teachers come across from Stockton. It was 5 days and five nights on the stage.
Yeah. Do we have anybody that documented a summer's back then?
Well, that's my favorite person. Yeah. Is George Hand, and I've brought him up before. He was a saloon keeper in town, had a small little establishment, but he was one of these people that liked to keep a diary. He kept one during the Civil War times when he was in the Civil War and after in Tucson. And people say, well, maybe it was cooler in the 1870s, and that's sort of up to debate. But this is June 17, 1875. And this was in his diary. Very warm. Mercury at 9 o'clock, 100 degrees. 12 noon, 102 degrees. Davis made a big kite 7 feet high. He took up a subscription, collected some money to buy twine, and then decided to play the money off against a Monty game. And this was in his saloon. And then he says, I just introduced the game of Monty. Mercury at 6 p.m. was 100 degrees, closed to 10 o'clock. And as usual, that was interesting, have a girl's name, Louise, and a dollar. So that's when we had a red light district.
Yeah.
And he'd always put the girl's name and how much it was for that evening.
Wow. And, of course, it wasn't as hot, I don't think, because it didn't have all the asphalt.
Right. You had, well, it could get hot in the day, but it would dissipate in the evening. So you had a better chance at sleeping to better night. Sleeping outside.
And then there's later, of course, one of our great sponsors, Fox Tucson Theater.
Right.
What folks would go to the theater
right.
to cool off.
We had an evolution. When the Fox opened in 1930, it was evaporative. But I think it was about 3 days later that it actually got refrigeration. And the thing about this, it's sort of an evolution. We went from ice to electric fans in the 1890s, evaporative cooling that Supervisor Elias was working about. That was good when it was dry, but you might as well turn them off. There's a wonderful longer-term friend that she always talks about August. She's and with evaporating, she says, you just can't be a sissy.
No.
You just got to
I'll tell you, we endured for many, many years here in town with evaporative, and finally we couldn't take it anymore. I think we've still got about 10%. That's the figure I've heard about homes that are still evaporative cooling.
Quite a few. And a lot of people really prefer it.
Yeah.
If they don't have allergies and all the pollen situations. The last little piece that I'd like to talk about is that what we actually have by 1902, you have a familiar name, invention of modern mechanical air conditioning by Willis Carrier.
Oh,
and then the first department store was in Detroit, Hudson's. They got air conditioning in 1924. Now, politics being what it is, 1928, 29, guess who got air conditioning?
Who?
The Capitol. The House and Senate got air conditioned before a lot of other people.
Wow, that must have been pretty darn sticky in Washington
and then
in the summertime.
The big deal, same kind of unit that Foxwood Theater had. And then 1939, World's Fair, Carrier had what was called the Carrier Igloo of Tomorrow. And that's when they were promoting air conditioning.
There you go. Ken Scoville, we'll look for your work and your talk coming up at Tohono O'Toole. That'll be Saturday morning, 10 to 11, in the Education Center. You can find out and get directions at the Tohono O'Toole website. Ken, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you as we get closer to the anniversary of the European settlement here. It's not really the birth of Tucson. That you'd have to go back many thousands of years.
But same spot.
Yeah,
because there are actually pit houses below the Spanish Presidio.
Yeah, but it's the European
right
portion of our history, the founding that we'll be celebrating in August. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you.
All right, coming up next, Attorney Don Luce. So much to talk about. So many new laws. Hey, what's new in Arizona? A long list of new laws. And we'll hear about some of the more, some of the marquee new laws from Don, who's in the House, ready to come on right after this.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA's Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
He's one of our great contributors. I was mentioning all of their bios are up at buckmastershow.com. He is attorney Don Luce of Luce Law Group with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor. He's the author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Both books are now in their second planning, and we're going to be talking about a lot of new laws. Is there ever a year, Don Luce, first of all, great to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, Bill.
Is there ever a year where we don't have a lot, like hundreds of new laws?
No. Every year have about 300 new laws that go onto the books.
Hard to believe. 300. Looking at this crop generally of these nearly 300 measures, what can you say generally about the group?
Well, okay. So the Arizona legislature had tried unsuccessfully for about a decade to pass a statewide texting and driving ban.
Right.
They finally got it. It mm-hmm. doesn't take effect until January 1, 2021, but nonetheless, it's on the books. Okay. The legislature this year, after decades, finally raised the minimum limits for liability insurance if you're driving a car. That law hadn't been changed since 1972. And I'll talk about that in just a moment. But those two things in and of themselves are very significant because so much time had passed either since the legislation was first introduced and failed to pass or since the last legislation had been enacted and no change had been made.
Why do these laws take effect now?
Well, the legislature adjourned its session, its 2019 session, on May 28th.
Mm-hmm.
Unless the law has an emergency provision or a provision in it that says it's to take effect at some future date other than 90 days after the legislative session, the law takes effect 90 days after the legislature adjourns, which in this case would be at the end of August.
Hmm. I want to take a deep dive into the mandate that vehicle owners purchase policies that provide for at least $25,000 worth of coverage for injuries caused to any one person. You said that the current law had been on the books since 1972. That was the year I was married. That's like... That's 47 years ago.
Well, I you make a very good point. So let's start with the premise that driving is a privilege.
Right.
It's not a right.
Uh-huh.
And in order to drive in Arizona, every operator is required to have liability insurance. So mm-hmm. if I should accidentally injure someone or damage someone's property, that injured person could then collect under my liability insurance policy. It's often called car insurance or auto insurance. From 1972 until now, the minimum amount has been $15,000 for any single person that I might injure or $10,000 for any property that I might damage. Well, if you think about that, it's not unusual that a person would have you know, close to that in just hospital bills.
Of course.
If they have to go to the emergency room.
Of course.
That amount is now increased to $25,000, which is a decent increase. But I would also argue that $25,000, even at that level, probably in some cases is not going to be enough. And the property damage portion has been increased from $10,000 to $15,000. Again, if the average cost of a new car is more than $15,000, then somebody could argue that $15,000 also is not enough. But at least the movement is in the right direction, in my opinion.
What kept this from moving? What took so long?
Well,
was it an insurance lobby or what?
Okay, so yeah. My understanding is that the insurance companies are actually in favor of this because okay. It allows them to increase the premiums.
Oh,
it's estimated that the new law, which by the way doesn't take effect until July 1st of next year, so any policy that comes up for renewal or is purchased on or after July 1, 2020 is subject to these new minimum requirements. Up until that time, they don't apply. But the carriers, by some estimates, are going to be charging $3 to $8 more per month for the new coverages. And again, these are mandatory coverages. You can't negotiate with the carrier to get less than this. You can certainly negotiate with the carrier to buy more than this. And as long as we're on the subject, each person has the option with their own carrier to buy what's known as uninsured and underinsured coverage. And what this means is that if you're injured by a person who has, let's say, $15,000 in liability coverage and your injuries are significant and $15,000 is insufficient, then you can collect under your own policy. In that case, it would be underinsured for up to the limit of whatever you've purchased with your own insurance company. Mm. The uninsured coverage applies if you're injured by a motorist who is simply uninsured, and then you would have the right under your policy to be compensated for your injuries under that coverage.
The governor had vetoed something very similar, Don Luce, a year ago.
Right. Last year, there was a proposal to increase the minimum property damage to $25,000 from the current $10,000. Mm-hmm. He vetoed that. And there are some in the legislature who are simply opposed to mandatory insurance, period. I mean, just a per se, we don't agree with the requirement that motorists be required to have liability insurance. As a compromise, I think, this year's bill scaled back the property damage coverage to $15,000, which the governor did sign.
Let's move on to some. Are there some other insurance-related measures that we should talk about? I know there was something affecting landlords. Anything else that we want to cover in that area, Don Luce?
Well, with regard to landlords, mm-hmm. they were subject to a court ruling recently that said if they accepted a partial rent payment, they wouldn't be able to evict the tenant for non-payment of the full amount. The legislature addressed that issue. There's also another new law that applies to basically Airbnb rentals. So if you have a house or if you have a condo and you're renting it out using the Airbnb platform, under existing law, you're not required to disclose that to the local authorities, and you're not required to pay tax on the rent income that you receive. That's going to change because Governor Ducey, one of the bills that he signed, now requires that people renting out their house or their condo on an Airbnb platform, for instance, have to notify the city if there's a requirement as to what their activity is, what they're doing. The locality may choose to tax that rental income. And I think also importantly, if there's a problem with rowdy tenants or rowdy occupants, the neighbors now have the ability to contact the city, and the city has contact information for the owner and can address the issue with the owner. There are horror stories about people who rent their houses out for wedding receptions or golf outings or similar activities, and the neighborhood all of a sudden finds itself with dozens of vehicles on the street and in the driveways, and it's a complete mess. Mm-hmm. And so I think what this new legislation does is it takes it a step in the direction of allowing the localities to more closely control the activities with regard to rentals.
If you have a medical marijuana card the governor has signed into law, that card will now be good for 2 years, not one.
Well, and okay, so I actually found that law fascinating because once the voters approved medical marijuana, the Arizona Department of Health Services established a fee for the issuance of the card. And there are now about 200,000 medical marijuana users in Arizona who have cards. Mm-hmm. Okay, they're cardholders. Under current law, they have to renew their card annually in order to legally purchase marijuana from the dispensaries. They can purchase up to 2.5 ounces every 2 weeks. And the cost of the annual renewal is $150. Now, if you change the law to only require the card to be renewed every 2 years, you're basically, if you're the state, you're forgoing $150 each year from a cardholder every other year. If there are 200,000 cardholders, if my math is correct, mm-hmm. that's $30 million in fees that the state is no longer going to collect and that medical marijuana cardholders will no longer need to pay.
Ingrid would like to speak with us. Ingrid called at 790-2040. Hey, Ingrid, go ahead.
Hi. Sir, do you do a lot of the homeowner association materials? I ask because there are several issues going on. One has to do with the smoking of weed and the spreading of those fumes into other people's homes and into their lungs and into their brains. Homeowners Association boards really can't deal with that. Sheriff's Department doesn't want to and will actually make trouble for the complaining party. And also, do you know anything about elections when there is not a quorum? As far as having to have another election rather than just allowing people to willy-nilly appoint whom they want and just have the people who ran for the board do that selection.
Thank you, Ingrid. Unfortunately, I do not practice in that area. And to my knowledge, none of the laws that are going to be taking effect this year relate to the topics that you've raised. So I would encourage you, if you have an issue with either of those topics, that you consult a lawyer who does practice in the area of homeowners association rights. As I think you know, there is a statute in Arizona that governs very closely homeowners associations, what they can do, what they can't do, and what the rights of the property owners are who live in an HOA-controlled community.
All right. I've only got about 40 seconds, Don Luce. Arizona Laws 101 has already been revised. It's in his second printing. I think you could think about a third printing after
well,
this
year. As you yeah. and I discussed, Bill, every year the legislature sends hundreds of bills to the governor, and historically the governor's been signing about 300 of those bills into law. Not all of them make it, but the majority of bills that are sent to the governor actually get signed by him. I'm not seeing 300 laws coming off of the books every year. So what we're seeing is there is an expansion of Arizona laws, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, but it is a fact. The law changes and new laws are added literally every year.
So you really don't have to take anything out of Arizona Laws 101. Laws not going out,
the
right?
The book is getting bigger.
Yeah, there you go. Don Luce, always a pleasure. Attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group, offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Don, where are your books, Arizona Laws 101 and Estate Planning in Arizona, which has just gone into its second printing? What'd be the best way to obtain those books?
Generally online. Amazon would probably be the best choice.
All right, Don Luce, always a pleasure. Thank you very
much,
Don.
Pleasure's mine. Thank you.
That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Don Luce and John Couch, our fine engineer producer, have a great afternoon and evening.